Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 19th day of January, 2017. I'm Todd Gleason, coming to you from the road today, somewhere between Altamont and Collinsville, Illinois, at this point. So our program not live. No update at the commodity markets in terms of price for the afternoon. However, we will talk, of course, with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett is not available this afternoon as he's traveling out of the country. And then we'll also discuss the weather forecast too, that with Mike Tenora from T-Storm Weather out of Chicago on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Do find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Well, a couple of quick reminders as I'm traveling that you can catch up with me if you'd like. You can see my calendar of events and schedule online at willag.org, of course. This evening, I will be in Collinsville at the Doubletree Hotel, that for the Farm Credit Winter Meeting there. It is a supper. If you'd like to come out, you can do that at 5 o'clock. Kim Holzapfel will be with us this evening to take a look at the commodity markets. Speaking of which, we'll record today at about 3, as long as I can get hold of them. I don't see any problem with that. Commodity Week with Elaine Cubb. She's at ElaineCubb.com out of Elkhorn, Nebraska. And Greg Ginder will join us, too, from FC Stone from Chesterfield, Missouri. Commodity Week is our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture. Now, let's take a quick look at what happened in the grain markets, at least through the midday. Again, I'm traveling, so these numbers are from the noon hour today. Corn futures were up about a penny, so not very much of a change on the day. March contract at 366 and a half during the noon hour. December at 393 and a quarter, a penny and a half higher. March beans were down to a 1073. July at 1086 were off to, again, these are midday numbers. And wheat futures were down about a nickel in the lead option at 425 and three quarters. The July harvest month at 456 and three quarters, 4¾ of a cent lower.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For 100 years, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this evening. Periods of showers, mainly before 3 a.m. tonight. Patchy fog, a low of about 41 degrees. East winds at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Turning light and variable overnight. A chance of precipitation set at 80%. New precipitation amounts between a quarter and half of an inch are possible overnight tonight. Tomorrow for Friday, areas of fog before noon, otherwise cloudy. A high of 53 degrees. West winds at 5 to 8. Turning to the south-southeast in the afternoon. That'll bring us Friday night. A chance of rainfall. Maybe some showers before midnight. A 30% outlook. Patchy fog before midnight, otherwise cloudy. With a low of about 46 degrees, the southeast wind at about 8 miles an hour overnight. On Saturday, a high of 60 degrees, winds out of the south at 8 to 13, gusting to 21. Saturday night, a 30% chance of showers, mostly cloudy. A low of 44, south winds at 5 to 9, turning light and variable. And Sunday, a 30% chance of showers after the noon hour, mostly cloudy, a high of 56 degrees. On a northeast wind at 6 to 10. Sunday night, a chance of showers, cloudy, a low of 41. Monday, a chance of showers before the noon hour, cloudy with a high of 46. And Monday evening, mostly cloudy, a low of 34 degrees. By the time we get to Tuesday, we'll see cloudy skies again, a high of 46. Tuesday evening, we'll drop to 35. Clouds will be with us on Tuesday night. And into Wednesday, we'll go to a high of 45 degrees. Do check out our weather forecast online. You can find them at willag.org, as well as everything else. Check out the link directly to the CMR weather, and you can catch all the information that comes to you from our meteorologist 5 different days a week and 5 meteorologists. Speaking of which, we'll talk with Mike Tenora at the bottom of the half hour.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 19th day of January of 2017. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason, traveling with Farm Credit today across the southern part of the state in Altamont this morning. And then this afternoon, actually this evening at 5 o'clock, we'll be in Collinsville for another one of the crop insurance meetings. We're at the Doubletree there, so if you want to drop by for a meal and to hear a little bit about crop insurance, and Kim Holzapfel will be along with us, too, to take up commodity marketing. Speaking of which, Dan Zwicker always joins us on a Thursday. He is here now. Just a point of reference, Dan and I are talking over the noon hour today, not live on the radio this afternoon, so we haven't seen the end of the market trade. Hey, Dan, thanks for being with me this morning. Tell me about trade in Chicago, what you've seen over the last week or so.
Well, as a technician, I've got to be excited about the way the corn and soybean market has performed here so far during the month of January. The markets performed quite well during December, and that positive price action has extended itself on into January here. Now, I think in the short run, at least looking at some of the short-term indicators, would indicate the market might begin to start struggling here later this week, or I guess this is Thursday already, but maybe Friday, maybe early next week. We may go into a period of consolidation for a few days. Since January has been dominantly up, somewhere in here, you will see the long traders want to take some profits. And that may have a tendency to maybe have a period of weakness maybe sometime next week. But I think that weakness will be fairly light. I don't think it'll be a deep break. It definitely could be noticeable, but I don't look for it to be a real deep break. And then I look for the markets to regain the upside seasonal strength that they've been basically performing all through the fall months after they're making their corn made their early fall low or late summer low, beans made their low more seasonally, and then they have gradually climbed higher in here.
Do you have some targets to the upside for old and new crop?
Well, I do have some targets, but I'm afraid to tell people that because then they get that in their head and they won't sell anything maybe until that certain level. But let me put some timing work on it. I guess the way I look at it from a timing perspective, I've kind of studied my cycles and I've reworked them and studied them again and went over and over them, and it's beginning to look to me like we could be looking at more of a winter, early spring high in both corn and soybean markets. Corn may be the first one to top out, and then we sink through the spring into maybe a summer type low. So the markets, at least from a cyclical point of view, look to me like they're going to strengthen as we go into February. Corn could very well strengthen enough to try to buy back more acres, or the acres that everybody's assuming that is being switched to soybeans, that the market, corn market, might perform during the month of February, get the insurance average price high enough to maybe bring some of those acres back into corn that was maybe drifting over to soybeans. And of course, once it accomplishes that, by as we get into that March, April timeframe, mostly April, May, we're going to be getting into South American hedge pressure, and we'll see whether or not these weather adversities that we're seeing in Argentina, whether or not they're going to be significant enough to keep the bean market going into the spring. But we'll have to see. That'll have a lot to do with planting. So if there's anything that I'm on guard for, is that farmers, you know, once some of these prices become available, that they think that they can maybe keep their operations scouring and make some money, they may want to take a look at putting some price floors underneath it and kind of protect themselves, I guess, from a decline or favorable weather anyway as we begin the 2017 crop season. And then, of course, who knows what happens as we go later in the growing season. But I'm more inclined to see some kind of winter high, early spring high, and then declines as we go on into the spring.
Given what may or may not take place in the weather in South America, does this mean, and Kim Holzapfel this morning showed the folks in Altamont out of the TGM elevator system, I think there are 35 grain elevators in that system, the number of soybeans that are still in farmer hands in their elevator system compared to previous years, much lower at this time. That's not very surprising, but given a change in weather in South America doesn't happen, so that things stay as they are, would this mean that for old crop soybeans that producers have left to sell, not as many as they've had in the past, that you would be more likely to go ahead and market them sooner, sometime this spring, rather than doing the whole I'm going to hold on my Vegas sort of soybeans for a market rally in the summer months?
Well, I don't think it hurts to have some gambling inventory. Now, and everybody can kind of determine their own risk on gambling inventory. But no, what I see in the cyclicals, I would be more inclined to have most of my inventory priced or have a floor on it before I go to the field.
All right, so that's simple enough. Anything that you're watching that would change that?
Well, South America, of course, is, you know, after last year, and just about, nearly everyone got burnt bad on beans. I mean, it was even enough to see some management changes in big grain companies. The farmers not only sold too soon, the grain companies got their clock clean too, being short soybeans. I think everybody's a little scared to do a whole lot of soybean selling because of last year. And that's usually a sign that maybe you should be maybe jumping in that frying pan. But the thing that I'm watching is, and I know there's big discussion on it, Janet Yellen keeps talking about raising interest rates as we go through 17. But I still think the story of 17 is going to be a weak dollar. And I think that is going to provide some underlying support to the commodity complex that maybe nobody really expects. But we'll have to see how that plays. But like I said, my cycle stuff kind of says you need to kind of do what you want to do by the time you go to the field. And gambling stocks is, you know, whatever risk level you want to take.
Do you have a similar outlook for wheat?
Yes, wheat's going to be pretty much the same thing. Price action in wheat is kind of paralleling corn. Now wheat, we were going to have a much smaller crop, but that the wheat market may try to rally to try to encourage some spring wheat planting to kind of pick up the slack. And that's where I kind of think maybe corn and wheat may try to rally here to try to pick up a few more food grain acres or feed grain acres, whatever you want to call them, at the expense of oilseed acres. Because right now, I mean, the attractiveness of soybeans has definitely move some acres, at least in the fringe areas of the Corn Belt. I'm not too sure if it's moving many acres in the heart of the Corn Belt on the black, flat dirt. But I think that's something to be watching, whether or not we could get corn prices to rally during February to attract acres or to pull those acres back into corn.
Dan, thanks so much.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker, of course, is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're on the road this week with Farm Credit Illinois.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, as you know, I've been traveling this week with the Farm Credit folks on their winter meeting season series. Thanks to them at Farm Credit Illinois for having me host that series. One of the things that we've learned along the way is that there are some changes with crop insurance that producers will need to be aware of. And Caleb May is here from Farm Credit. He goes through a lot of the training process and understands some of these changes. The one that probably will cause most of the producers, maybe landowners, to think a little bit more about why this is or what's happening in the background is the need to collect more data from them about where crop is stored. Can you tell me a little bit about the changes and what they really do mean?
Yeah, the biggest change this year is what we're looking at in the production reporting season, which is what we're doing right now. And a lot of times your agents might be asking a few more questions this year than what they have in the past. And the reason is that we need to report production slightly different than we have in the past or be a little more detailed than we have in the past. The example given to the group of farmers today was really easy to understand that if you have the home farm and you have the north farm, in the past, you could just combine those two farms together and say, together those two farms made 150 bushel total per acre, and we could do that. Now we actually have to designate that as a prorated average. So what that means is if you don't keep separate production records on those two farms, we have to note that on your production report, or there is some stiff penalties, and the RMA is putting some teeth into this if they would happen to pull your policy as a review and you do not designate that as a prorated average and can't back that up with some sort of soft record, meaning load records, scale tickets, something like that to back those up. The penalty is 75% of your previous year's APH or previous approved APH on those farms. So penalties are significant. We want to make sure we get that right for everybody.
When I first heard this, the cynic in me said, well, Farm Credit is wanting to gather some more information about what producers have on hand. It's been a tougher year. Maybe they may be making some more production loans and they want to make sure. But really, this is an RMA promulgated rule that you have to follow.
Yeah, the RMA, this is exactly what it is. And the AIPs are the approved insurance providers. They provide spring updates to all the agents. And this was one of the big topics of conversation we had at our spring updates, was making sure we as agents understood how we needed to report production for our farmers for the RMA to meet those requirements.
Otherwise, the upcoming crop insurance year looks pretty much the same as in the past?
Yeah, other than that, there's a few other changes. There's a change to the prevent plant. The previous factor for corn was 60%, so if you leave a field fallow due to insurable perils, weather, it's usually due to too much water. The previous factor was 60%. You could qualify for up to 60% of your guarantee. They have reduced that down to 55%. I'm sure in the future the RMA will look at other crops. They did make some other changes to some other crops, but as far as our market area goes, corn is the only thing that was changed. There was a few other little changes, a definition of practical to replant. So when replants take place, the insurance companies will expect the grower to go back to that same crop through the late plant period. So what this was done, it was more of a definition change or an interpretation change by the insurance company or by the RMA. So the insurance companies had a little more consistency across the board.
Caleb, thanks so much.
No problem. Thanks for having us.
Caleb May is with Farm Credit Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Well, last night news broke that Sonny Perdue would be the next Secretary of Agriculture. The incoming Donald Trump administration confirmed that today. He is the former governor of Georgia. The announcement comes after a very lengthy search, and the pick should bode well for agriculture, thanks Jay Truitt of Policy Solutions out of Washington, D.C. Truitt explains just how the selection process under the Trump transition team worked.
So first of all, I think the actual selections obviously came out of New York and the Trump team's interior advisors. I do know there's been a number of us around the country that have given a lot of advice and counsel, some taken, some not, within the whole process. But it's essentially people that have been around agriculture for a long time and have been involved in this process a couple of different times in the past.
He says Perdue should handle the role as USDA Secretary very well.
From his past, he's seen the experience associated with advances in research and technology and how that turns into profitability down on the farm level. He gets both the crop side and the livestock side really well because he's been on the crop production side and selling feed to livestock producers at his life, as well as being a vet. He really does bring a truly unique set of skills to the table. I think it's a great selection.
And while the selection of Agriculture Secretary took longer than any other cabinet post for the Trump administration, Truitt says there was more of a lack of politics behind the decision rather than political influences impacting the process.
You know, there were some great candidates that were discussed and some people that went through that probably didn't have the true blue executive experience that's needed or the length of executive experience that, you know, that they would want. I don't think that they're looking for yes men and yes women. I don't think that was ever the criteria. But they did want people that bought into the vision of what they were trying to sell and that actually understood that, as you can see on the news wires and on TV and radio today, these nominating committees and confirmation committees hearing process is tough. It's ugly. It's a contact sport at a whole bunch of levels. And I think they were looking for people that they thought would and be willing to, you know, go through that process and really excel. And other than that, I don't think there really was those politics. This was more about a hiring process to hire the right kind of people with the right skills and the right experience to meet what they think are going to be the challenges in the next few years.
Truitt says he looks forward to working with Perdue and the Trump administration in Washington, D.C.
It's obviously a little disappointing that it's taken this long to make all this work out, and I'm not for sure if there were complications somewhere within other obligations or whatever may have made it take this long, but obviously Mr. Perdue has been in the lead for this role for quite some time, and I'm glad they finally got it wrapped up and look forward to walking in and saying hi to him sometime in the near future and congratulating him on a job well done.
Jay Truitt is of Policy Solutions out of Washington, D.C. His audio comes courtesy of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting in Kansas City, Missouri. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, traveling today with the Farm Credit folks in Altamont and Collinsville. Back in 2 minutes, we'll have the weather forecast.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Since 1916, Farm Credit Illinois has been helping farm families succeed, providing farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing. Farm Credit Illinois joins in celebrating the rich history of Illinois agriculture.
It's National Popcorn Day. Popcorn first became a hit in the U.S. during the Great Depression, especially in movie theaters, where it was often sold at 5 cents a bag. By the way, at least 6 cities claim to be the popcorn capital of the world, including Valparaiso and Van Buren, Indiana, and Ridgeway, Illinois. On this day in agricultural history in 1736, James Watt was born. A Scottish inventor, his steam engine contributed substantially to the Industrial Revolution. In 1813, Sir Henry Bessemer was born, an English inventor and engineer. He developed the first process for manufacturing steel inexpensively. In 1825, Ezra Daggett and Thomas Kensett of New York City were granted the first U.S. patent for food storage in cans. They had been canning seafood since developing the process in 1819. Tin cans had been used by the military and explorers since at least 1813, but their development did not really take off until after the Civil War. And in 1915, George Claude of Paris was issued a U.S. patent for a neon tube advertising sign. Claude introduced neon signs in the U.S. in 1923. A Packard car dealership in Los Angeles purchased a pair for $2,500. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, traveling this afternoon somewhere between Altamont and Collinsville. Of course, pre-recorded this portion of the program with Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us. Can we talk a little bit about what happened last weekend and earlier this week in Argentina? In your opinion, how wet, how much flooding, how much damage really has been done? And then you'll probably want to go on ahead and take a look at maybe a changing weather pattern there too.
Well, there's certainly been a major problem in Argentina. Leading into last weekend, a lot of areas had received 10 to 14 inches of rain over the past 30-day period. That was primarily within about 40% of the key corn and soybean production region. Now, not all of that area had received that much rain, but that's kind of where it was all contained. So a pretty large area here had been very wet leading into last weekend. Then we saw 2 to 4 inches of rain on top of that from Saturday into Sunday. That led to 30-day rainfall totals that ranged from 12 to 17 inches at most of the key locations within Cordoba, Santa Fe, and northern Buenos Aires. So about 5 official rainfall observation stations show between 12 and 17 inches of rain. That is a lot of rain, and that's why we've had the flooding issues there. Now things have changed, though, and this is where things get a little bit interesting. It's turned very dry and very hot across much of this region. The last couple of days have had highs around 90 to 93 degrees, which isn't too extreme as we know. But the potential issue is that as we go forward, we can see that heat is going to last at least 7 to 10 days, and that many days will reach 100, maybe even 105 at times. So a pretty significant heat wave is coming up for all these wet areas. At the same time, we haven't even mentioned this part yet, but the far southern area of Buenos Aires and into La Pampa, which includes some key soybean areas, probably 5 to 10% of production, have been extremely dry over that same period that these areas to the north were wet. That same area is going to see a few thunderstorms over the next 5 days or so, but not a drought buster, and they will also experience heat. So by the time you add all this up, you have to ask yourself, what would be a good weather scenario for Argentina? If we get dry weather, well, that leaves the southern areas too dry. If we get wet weather, well, that's a problem for those central areas because they've already seen way too much rain. Hot weather is rarely good. You could argue that, well, maybe if it was hot, that would help to diminish some of the rainfall. But crops, we know, in the middle of January and into February don't like heat in Argentina. And if it turned cool, well, then all the wetness would linger. So I think no matter how you argue it, you can't really draw up a favorable weather scenario going forward for Argentina, and that simply reflects that a problem has occurred.
So we have some concerns in Argentina. Brazil has been better for the most part, but there are some problem areas.
There are. Bahia in particular, which produces around 5% of first crop corn and soybeans in Brazil. This state has been very dry over the last 30 to 40 days, with most areas only having received 1 to 2 inches of rain, and a few areas even less than that, compared to about 10 inches over the same period 1 year ago, and about 8 inches is normal. So we need rain in Bahia. We don't see it forthcoming. And we do see a lot of rain to the immediate south and west, which is where early soybean harvesting is underway, including in Mato Grosso. So in Brazil, nothing is perfect. but no bigger problems like we have in Argentina.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with me today. I do appreciate it, Mike.
You're welcome, Todd. Talk to you soon.
Mike Tenores with T-Storm Weather. He's from Chicago, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.